Welcome back. Michael Warren Thomas here. It's Naturally Green on WISL 1040, 92.1 FM. And it is a slightly different day than it was last Saturday. Namely, it's summer. And we were in winter last Saturday. After the broadcast, I headed over to the Newbury Park Pastries mini market, farmer's market. And like total whiteout. And then yesterday it's 80 degrees, almost, rounding up, maybe 70. It said 79 in my car. So again, that's why we love to live in this area. We go from a whiteout to nearly 80 degrees in 6 days. I actually, even more extreme, quite a few years ago, went to South Dakota, where with my father. It's where he grew up, and we got there in September, mid-September. We're going to stay for 5 days at most. It was 103 when we got there in mid-September, and 5 days later, 4 nights later, it was 35 degrees and a wind chill below freezing. The wind chill is like 29 or 30. Crazy dip in temperatures. So it's nice to have summer. Yesterday really felt like summer, and the toads started singing in my pond. It was just you could smell spring. You know, it made such a difference. Being able to sit outside, just crazy. What a change. So again, If you have any problems figuring out what's growing in your yard, maybe you can't tell whether it's something you planted, whether it's the seeds that you planted. That's why we plant them in a line so we can tell. Or, you know, some weed tree that you don't recognize that you're wondering about. Email me a photo or two, michael@saverlife.com, and try to identify it for you. Maybe it looks like it belongs there, but you just don't know what it is. You don't know how to prune it, when to prune it, if to prune it, all those things, maybe even what insects to look for that might eat it. We'll talk a little bit about the red lily leaf beetle that's already showed up. And I mentioned sawflies last weekend that were on some roses. So along with the leaves and the flowers come the insects, most of them good ones. We just need to be able to recognize the ones that can wreak havoc, like that red lily leaf beetle. So again, email me photos, michael@saverlife.com. Right now we have a special guest with us, one of the founders of Community Composting, Brent Arnold. Good morning, Brent.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well. I was burying kitchen scraps in my vegetable garden yesterday to turn into compost. It's the burial method of composting, which I haven't seen talked about much, but it's sort of the oldest way of doing it. And community composting is an organization that collects the kitchen scraps, right? And give us a sense for how community composting started.
That's right. We collect kitchen scraps around the greater Rochester area. We even clean the bucket for you and give it back. So really, you're just putting those food scraps in the bucket, and we'll take care of the rest. We started about 6 years ago. It was a very grassroots project between me and a friend of mine, Stephen Kraft. We just kind of put a feeler out there online to see if the Rochester community was interested in this kind of service. And they were. They were really excited. We had about 500 people who wanted to pre-register right away. So we pulled the trigger and launched the service. And now we're servicing over 1,100 residential customers in Rochester. And we have about 600 or so bin swap customers that are swapping their bins out at grocery stores in town as well.
I see those at Abundance and at Lori's Natural Foods. Both of them are locations for the bins. Before community composting started, where did all these kitchen scraps go? Just in the landfill, right?
I'd say the vast majority of them went in the landfill, that's correct, with a few exceptions being the folks who are composting at home, which is a great way to go.
Right. You're not trying to convince people not to compost at home, but this is for people that maybe don't have a yard where they can do that, or they don't want to, or maybe they don't even have a yard, so they need to take this. And these are, I look at it as nutrients, where when I consider, you know, do I put this in my vegetable garden, or do I put it in the trash? If I put it in the trash, I'm adding to trash, but I'm also losing nutrients. Part of this is saving nutrients, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, it's a valuable nitrogen-rich product. And if we are diligent about it and we want to do that ourselves at home, it's not very hard, and we can, really improve the quality of our own soil. And just one more note on that, too. Putting in the landfill isn't just not getting those nutrients. It's actually, having those food scraps go through a different process, chemical process, called anaerobic digestion. And one byproduct of that process is methane, which is a greenhouse gas that's about 20 times more potent than carbon dioxide. So it's, kind of a double whammy when you're throwing things in the landfill from an environmental standpoint.
And the community composting, you gather these bins, and you've posted some great photos of how colorful these bins can be. The kitchen scraps are kind of pretty.
Yes, my business partner Jessica Hamm took it on herself and kind of invented this photography of somewhat composed food scraps, and she's done such a beautiful job. If you check out our Instagram feed, you'll see hundreds of photos that she's taken. She's got just a great eye for it, and she also has an abundance of compost around her too to make art with.
And how does someone participate? You sign up for a certain period of time?
So you can sign up online. We have monthly subscriptions. You just enter your address, and it will let you know if you're in our service area or not. If you are, great. You can have curbside service. Those plans start at $16 a month for every other week service. And we also have a bin swap program that we mentioned earlier, which, that system works by bringing your bin to the grocery store, leaving it outside at the bin swap location. And then you just go inside and grab a clean bin and do some shopping. And when you check out, they'll charge you $4 to swap that bin out. And you take it home and you've got a clean bin to start over again.
And the part of the process, people get some of this gold, great soil back again?
That's right. So as a member, you'll be able to receive 3 bags of compost in the spring each year, which is about 150 pounds or 6 cubic feet.
That's a lot of compost.
It's a fair amount. I know, because I bag them and haul them everywhere.
No, but that's going to make a huge difference to a garden. And the compost that you buy at stores doesn't look as good, doesn't feel as good, doesn't smell as good as I don't know if they pasteurize it. I'm not sure what, but it's stored and shipped and everything. And the compost that we make right here just seems more alive.
Yeah, there's a real microorganism element to this. The compost is alive, and compost that's made really well has more of those microorganisms, more processes, more biodiversity in the soil.
Yeah. And are people learning more about microorganisms? Actually, last Sunday we were talking about kombucha with Caitlin has katbucha, another process where microbes are something we're trying to get more of, in this case in a drink, but do people have a sense that microbes are actually good things, other than like coronavirus microbes, but most microbes are really beneficial?
I totally agree, and I think that there's been a paradigm shift towards the microbes of the world. We're learning a lot more about living symbiotically, really, with these organisms and seeing how we can help them grow and how they can help us grow and have a more sustainable, healthy, interesting, delicious lifestyle.
I think I read something about, you know, an average teaspoon of soil has about 4 billion microbes in it, and I would imagine compost has probably a lot more. It's just, basically, it's all microbes. We just can't see them.
That's correct. There's quite the biodiversity. One thing that's we talk about a lot is, you know, compost, when it's done on an industrial scale, like we do, we actually partner with a group called Vermigreen, and they have large outdoor turn row style composting. It's a very tried and true natural way of composting. And those piles will reach 170 degrees, and they'll maintain that temperature for a very long time. And there are microbes that live in that high heat that are really beneficial to breaking down the process and also converting the material into a really nutrient-rich medium to grow plants.
It's actually the microbes that get it to that temperature. They don't put heaters. They don't. You don't even need to put compost in the sun. It's the microbes that they're basically sweating while they're working, I guess.
Exactly. There's so much energy going on there, converting chemicals and changing everything. And it's the real factor is the mass. So the more mass you can add to that kind of living pile, the hotter it's going to be. It's actually a really beautiful sight. In the morning, you can go and break open a pile, and just billows of steam are coming out of it. It gets impressively hot.
So what instructions do you give people as far as what can go in the green bins, what cannot go in? There's some things you probably don't want in those bins.
Sure. We're pretty liberal in what we can take because we are using a more industrial facility. We can take things that typical home composting cannot, like meat, bones, dairy, shellfish. Those will all break down in a larger process, but they may cause problems in a home compost where they could attract pests or not break down as quickly because we can't get those temperatures that we're looking for.
So what can't go in there?
Well, plastic. We also don't take those bioplastics. They will break down, but they break down a lot longer, and they can gum up machines that help with sifting. So we've put a ban on any kind of bioplastics. There are so many products out there that are labeled as compostable, but if they have those biopolymers in them, they're not compatible with our system. Sorry about that.
That's all right. It's cute. So when the takeout containers say that they're compostable, or maybe they're made of paper. Are those the kind of things that need to go in regular composting, regular recycling as paper? You don't want paper in yours.
Paper is actually fine. In fact, it works really well. I usually tell people if they're trying to decide whether or not to recycle their paper or compost it, I say if it's really clean cardboard, it's probably better off for the recycling bin. If it's soiled, greasy, small, then it's probably better off to be composted. And the only exceptions to that, if they have some sort of waxy coating or plastic coating, even if it's very thin, we can't put that in the compost.
And do you find people are pretty good about what they put in the containers? You don't have to do much sifting
They're pretty good. We empty our bins every day by hand, and they're 4-gallon bins, so it's pretty easy to grab that plastic fork that accidentally got in there. So we do some sifting through as we're dumping those bins out. But I would say most people very rarely have any contaminants in there.
And since you pick them up every 2 weeks, if people sign up for that, things aren't going to smell too bad generally. But are there lids for them, or what do you recommend?
It has a snap-on lid, and the smell is very manageable as long as you're using it correctly. I'd say the worst-case scenario, it's July, and you've left it on your back porch in the sunlight, and, you know, 3 days ago you put in some fish scraps or something terrible, and that's obviously going to smell really bad really quickly. But if you keep it in a cool, dry place out of the sun and just leave the lid on as normal, you can put really anything in there and it won't smell at your home. A lot of people leave it in their garage or even outside in a shady place.
Were you inspired by other parts of the country, other programs like this? I know Ithaca's had a Cayuga composting, I think, and where did you look for ideas about this?
We did a lot of research when we were first starting, and since then we've talked to dozens of other compost haulers as well. When we first started, we looked very closely at Compost Now in North Carolina. They have the same size bucket and a very similar business model. We were impressed with their professionalism and sort of the energy that they had along with their brand and their movement. So we called them up and said, hey, I think we're going to start something similar. And they were super supportive, and they're good friends to this day.
And you mentioned Vermigreen that you partner with. They provide compost more on a commercial scale, right, where businesses are looking for compost could buy it from them?
Sure, businesses and residents. If you're looking to get a few yards delivered to your home, you might give them a call up and have it delivered, but they would do that. It's a they have a handful of products too. They sell an organic compost, which is what we distribute to our customers. They also have a myriad of other products too, topsoils and mulches that you can order.
So if someone who's a member of Community Composting and gets their 150 pounds of compost, but they want more, they wouldn't buy it through you, they'd go through Vermigreen?
That's correct. We will sell during our give back some of our extra bags. It's really just we try to have enough to make sure it goes around and there's some left over, so we sell that off, but it isn't a real part of our business. Right. So, yes, I would definitely look to Vermigreen if you're looking to get in bulk.
You just don't want to load it back in the truck when you're done. And you would do some of those at the Brighton Farmers Market, right?
That's correct. And we didn't do it this year due to the coronavirus. We had built our kind of homemade bagging station where we would get a group of people, a mix of volunteers and people in community composting to come and bag by hand. And it's just shoulder-to-shoulder work, kind of sweating out there in the sun, and it just didn't seem like something that we could do safely. So this year we opted to distribute kitchen plants, actually, to all of our customers. So we've been distributing thousands of plants around Rochester to all of our members. We were able to partner with Lighthouse Gardens, which is an amazing greenhouse. And they make 4-inch potted plants, and we gave a whole list to all of our customers. They got to sort of pick and choose the ones that they wanted, and we delivered them to their house.
Nice. Yeah, we had Ty Lighthouse on a couple weeks ago, and his plants are at Lori's and at Abundance Market, among other places, and some of the garden centers, too, carry Lighthouse Gardens plants. So, yeah, that's a nice substitute for the compost. And so if someone wants to get started right away, they can get the bucket at one of those pickup places, right, or sign up online?
Either one is fine. If you sign up online, we'll deliver the bin to your door, and we'll get started within a week. And you can always go to Lori's or Abundance and put a deposit on a bin there for $10. It's refundable, and then you can just kind of bring in your compost whenever it's full and swap it out for $4.
And how much compost how many pounds of kitchen scraps do you estimate that you've taken in these 6 years?
In 6 years, I can tell you exactly, actually, because every single time we go to a stop, every house, we record the weight. And we've done that for every single stop for the last 6 years. And our total right now, let me see, is 2.4 million pounds.
Amazing. That's incredible. And I've been trying, and along with a lot of other people, trying to get the New York State's largest landfill in Seneca Falls to close as planned in 2020. It's 2025 that they are scheduled to close, and they're fighting that. They don't want to close because then they won't make any more money. But this is, you know, one way to try to reduce the amount of material that goes to a landfill. And yeah, 2 million pounds is
You know, it is significant. It's also a drop in the bucket compared to the potential amount of food waste that's still going to the landfill. And if you've ever driven by a landfill and you smell that sort of rotten smell, that's not from the regular trash and construction debris that goes there. That's from the organic material rotting. That's that anaerobic digestion process that smells sour and foul. So if we were able to really divert all of the compostable materials from the landfill, they wouldn't smell at all, which would be really nice for a landfill.
So what needs to change to get more, divert more of those materials and have organizations like yours compost them rather than end up in that landfill?
I think that we've got kind of a two-tiered strategy right now. I'd say ultimately there needs to be legislation that requires everyone to compost. New York State and other states have put in systems to have larger compost producers or food waste producers require them to compost, but they have to be within a certain radius of a compost facility. Otherwise, they're not required to do that. And they have to make a pretty substantial amount of food waste in order for that requirement too. So I think over the years we can expect to see those requirements shift to smaller thresholds and more stringent requirements. I also think, you know, from our side, what we can do is spread the good word, get positive about composting, show how easy it is, how safe it is, how fun it is, and how it adds value and nutrients to your soils locally. It's just feel good from start to finish, and particularly feel good when you look at the alternative of putting that material in a landfill.
Well, communitycomposting.org, and you need volunteers and things also as well?
Not usually, but if you're interested in volunteering, please send us an email. We do keep a list. Right now, we're probably not going to have any volunteer opportunities with the pandemic going on, but we'd be happy to take your name nonetheless.
All right. Well, Brent, thank you for your time this morning, and thank you for, you know, bringing this idea to Rochester 6 years ago and to the region. You serve more than just the city of Rochester, around greater Rochester. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. That's Brent Arnold, communitycomposting.org, for more details. And again, several ways to get started. You can sign up online. You can get one of those green buckets, put down a deposit on it at places like Abundance Co-op in Rochester and Lori's Natural Foods in Henrietta. And fill your green bucket, and then they'll do the composting. If you have questions about doing composting in your own backyard, Cornell Cooperative Extension has quite a bit of information about it. There's lots in general online also, and you're welcome to email me questions, michael@saverlife.com. One of the things we didn't ask him about was pet waste, dog, cat, etc., and meant to ask him about that. We compost ours. I have a post hole digger that I got years ago for digging post holes when I had a landscape design business, and use that in the backyard along with a, it's like a little cover that goes over the hole that you dig and has a lid, and you can put the dog waste down that hole. You fill it up, cover it with soil. It composts in place. And I found the lid and the top at a pet store a long time ago. You don't really need to have that. But you do have to have something so the dog or the people don't fall in that hole. You could break your leg in a hole dug with a post hole, because you can dig pretty deep with these post hole diggers, go down several feet. But it works really well for pet waste. And again, I'm guessing that they are not taking that in community composting, but I'll check with them and let you know next week. The phone number here, 585-346-3000. You can also email me, michael@saverlife.com. We'll take a quick break. Be back after a word from our sponsors on WISL 1040.
I'm going to tell you again now, if you're still listening there, if you're driving into town with the dark cloud above you, dialing the number who's bound to love you. Call me at the station. The lights are all big.
Welcome back. Michael Warren Thomas here, the sponsors of Naturally Green here on WISL 1040, 92.1 FM, and some awesome sponsors we've had for years, decades in some cases, including Wisteria Flowers and Gifts. They are doing delivery or curbside pickup. It's wisteriaflowersandgifts.com, located on Culver Road right near University. Give them a call and brighten someone's day with a bouquet delivered to them. Perhaps someone doesn't have a lot of spring flowers in their yard, and they would love to have a nice bouquet. And those flowers that are this fresh from wisteria are going to last beautifully. They also carry a lot of silk flowers, and they are high quality ones that look incredibly real. So wisteriaflowersandgifts.com, again, Culver Road, right near University. Also brought to you by Palmiter's Garden Nursery. They are open down in Avon, between south of Avon, Route 39, between Avon and Geneseo. A gorgeous nursery, beautiful gardens, and some fantastic plants. And it's not going to be as busy a place as some of the nurseries might be in the closer to Rochester. It's half an hour away, half an hour south, and it's a beautiful time of the year to take that drive on Route 39 and go through Avon and Geneseo. Well, it's Palmiter's Garden Nursery, again, about a half an hour south of Rochester. Also brought to you by the Birdhouse on Monroe Avenue. They are open 7 days a week, doing curbside pickup. Very easy. I ordered some bird seed a couple days ago, and showed up, and they had it on a table waiting for me right in front of the store. And you can look up online and also not only see what they have in terms of feeders and birdhouses, et cetera, and bird baths, but also check out their videos they've been doing. They do their tea and tweets on Tuesdays online now rather than in person, and really great educational videos about all kinds of things, not just birds, but squirrels and wildlife in general, and butterflies. So the birdhouseny.com. Follow them on Facebook and the birdhouseny.com. And right around the corner from them, at Gallia's Tropical Greenhouse and Florist, they have not only flowers, but also carry the big green eggs for grilling. This is a space-age ceramic that is painted green. Looks like a dinosaur egg, but a very big one. And really is incredibly efficient. because of that ceramic material, it really insulates it far more than the ordinary metal grills. So for, you know, smoke some, do some pulled pork or something over a long period of time, these are very easy to use. Also, high temperatures. You want to do, pizza on the grill in 90 seconds. You can do that with these big green eggs. Again, you can get them at Gallia's Tropical Greenhouse and Florist, gallias.com, G-A-L-L-E-A-S, the corner of Jefferson and Clover, and right around the corner from the Birdhouse, which is on Clover, or is on Monroe Avenue, right near Clover. It's, again, two places to visit, both open 7 days a week, right near each other. When you visit our sponsors, tell them you heard about it here on Naturally Green. She likes wings. They're easy to grow. They are easy to grow. Easy to grow in the morning dew. She likes wings. They're easy to grow. And they always are there, everywhere when she needs a few. Welcome back. Mike Warren Thomas here. It's Naturally Green on WISL 1040, 92.1 FM. And you can email me, michael@saverlife.com, if you have questions, wondering, you know, not only what something is, but if you're wondering whether it's the right time to do something, or if you have a question about something in your yard, send me a photo. Maybe you're wondering what to plant in a certain location. Send me a couple photos and maybe I can give you some suggestions. michael@saverlife.com. We have a great guest with us right now, Lori Broccolo from Broccolo Tree and Lawn Care, Broccolo Nursery and Garden Center. Good morning, Lori.
Good morning, Michael. How are you today?
I'm doing pretty well, and it was a whiteout last Saturday, right? I couldn't even see to drive last Saturday.
It was awful. Yeah. And today, it's 50 degrees, so I'm wearing shorts, although some people think I'm a little crazy, but I'm like, this is lovely right now. I love it.
We've turned the corner. Yeah, it was nearly 80 degrees yesterday, and this is normal, though, really, for May. We often have a little bit of snow in May, sometimes a lot of snow, so, but people are, and we're professionals like you, are anxious to get out and work in gardens and work in the soil, aren't you?
Absolutely. So people have been coming for the past couple of weeks, even with the snow, trying to get vegetable plants and things like that. And we're like, no, it is way too early. This week, still kind of tempting it. We're trying to encourage people to hold off until next week. But due to their planning now, and perennials, though, can go in and shrubs can go in at this time.
Yeah, and the weather can change pretty quickly around here. Right now, the forecast, 10-day forecast, looks like, you know, 70s during or 60s during the day, and 40s, mainly 50s at night. But that can change. And so the nursery, Penfield Road, 441. What's happening there? Give us a sense for how business.
Interesting. I mean, we've been holding off because of the weather and getting our shipping and, you know, plus obviously the virus and all those concerns. But all of a sudden, Mother's Day weekend, people were just anxious. Even in that snow, I could not believe people came out. So we went ahead and told all of our deliveries that we've been holding off that they could bring them this week, and we got 6 truckloads this week. So today we have all hands on deck just trying to get everything well organized. But, oh, the plants are gorgeous, and it makes you really feel like spring is here. Uh-oh. Did I lose you, Michael? Did I lose you, Michael?
I think so.
Hello? Oh, hi.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, sorry about that.
I think I hear
that.
You.
All
no,
right.
I think it was on my end. I disappeared. I could hear you.
Okay, good. Good. So, anyway. Yeah, right now it's crazy over here because everybody's trying to get this place organized and beautiful for our guests to come and select plants. It's getting there.
People can come and browse. Can they order online or call you and order and have things delivered too?
Yes, absolutely. So our shopping online went live a week ago, and I am amazed at how many people are using it already. I don't know why we didn't do that years ago, but this virus is forcing us to work differently. And, so they can order online. We'll pull all the plants, take a look, make sure that they're, you know, acceptable, call them if anything needs to be changed, and people are coming by and picking them up. It's working out really well. A lot more deliveries this year because people are home and at least they're getting their mulch out there.
I think there'll be fewer weeds this year, right? In people's yards, people will spend more time weeding?
I think so, but then there's always the question of, do they know what the weed is? So this time of the year, it's so early, and that's always a challenge for even professionals. So, okay, do I remember you? Are you supposed to be here?
I was digging out black walnut trees from my front yard that the squirrels planted for me and are very hard to get out of the ground, and ran into something that was similar but not. The leaves weren't out much, and it might be buckthorn, but I'm going to let it grow and try and figure out what it is before I decide whether to take it out.
There you go. Yep. Sometimes the weeds might surprise you and actually be a beautiful wildflower.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll give it some more time, what's happening in terms of maintenance work that you do and, lawns, trees, and shrubs and things?
Yeah, so it's, again, interesting because the spring has lasted so much longer that typically we're complete with all of our pre-emergent crabgrass controls at this time of year. And so we're still able to take on a few new clients and do their first visit. Primarily, now that we're into May, usually it's been mowed a few times by now, the lawn, and it really needs fertilizer. So we're just getting into the season now where we might consider putting fertilizer on. And the next, the rule of thumb has always been Memorial Day, Labor Day, and Thanksgiving for fertilizing. And I think with the temperatures popping the way they are, we are going to be mowing a lot more often, and that means it's going to use up the nutrients and need that replenishing.
So, but you're able to get out and do that maintenance now?
Yep.
The shutdown has ended?
Yeah, we've actually been out even in some of the snow because those kinds of products needed to be watered in. And now's a good time to start spot treating for the weeds. Do not blanket treat. So we're out doing the lawn care for people. We're doing edging and mulching and garden cleanups. Normally this time of year, we are into some hardscape kind of projects, some really cool landscaping, but that's been on hold until yesterday, which means our maintenance customers who were home anxiously awaiting this year, we're able to get through to them really quickly and turn around within a couple of weeks by putting off the hardscape. So we've been prioritizing our maintenance clients and also helping people do some things themselves. And just we can do the heavy work, and they might do some of the lightweight work.
Do you think because people are spending more time at home over the last couple of months that they'll maybe think about their yards as that they want to spend more time actually out in the yard creating some living spaces out there, whether it's patio or, you know, a small water feature, outdoor grill kitchen area. It'd be interesting to see if you get requests for those designs.
Oh, definitely. So it's been, again, kind of a crazy year because of the weather and the economy. People have been holding back a little bit, but all of a sudden in the past couple of weeks, people are starting to, you know, really make decisions on whether or not they can go ahead with these projects. I remember a few years ago when we had some issues with the economy and people weren't traveling. So instead of traveling, taking some of their vacation money, and the term staycation become really attractive. So creating those spaces in their own yards that they can enjoy, this is probably going to be the year or two that people are focusing on that again, staying home and creating their own little vacation destiny in their own yards.
Yeah, I mean, you could greatly expand your living space, really, now that the weather's broken, to go outside. And how about vegetable gardens? Is that something that you can install for people who have been thinking that they might want to add that but don't know where to put it or how to go about it?
We are hoping to do some more live videos. Actually, we're planning on doing one at 10 o'clock. I'm just, I think Janine is not going to be able to make it in today, but we are doing Victory Gardens live Facebook every single Saturday, and people are really tuning in and paying attention to that. So the focus a couple of weeks ago was houseplants because people were kind of housebound. And over this week and next week, the focus is on vegetables. But cold, hardy vegetables absolutely could be in now, like the broccoli and Brussels sprouts, things like that. And we're there's a lot more themes of, you know, grilling. So what kinds of peppers are really good for grilling? And that's one of the focus. What kind of tomatoes could be grilled? And, of course, eggplant and zucchini. So planting grilling gardens and salad gardens is the trend this year. And the other is pollinators. You know, I mean, that's been a trend to begin with. But understanding that if we're going to have a vegetable garden and you want fruit or vegetables, you need to have pollinators. So mixing in some beautiful perennials that are going to attract the pollinators through the spring season and right until fall so that they're here next year for you.
And you've done a lot with butterflies for quite a few years now, right? The butterflies are another thing that you've been advocating, you know, the plants to attract them and habitats for them and things.
Absolutely. And native gardening. There are so many really interesting native plants or nativars, we're calling them, cultivars of natives that are great for not just honeybees and butterflies, but also for all the little tiny native bees that people don't even realize there. And these cute little hoverflies and there's so many different kinds of beautiful pollinators. The hummingbird moth, that's one that gets people really excited when they see that on their lilacs or the butterfly bushes. They're really attracted to that. But planting so that it's not just for the flowers, for the bees to pollinate, but also for the butterflies to lay their eggs on, so knowing what the host plants are. I think everybody should have a milkweed in their garden. They're beautiful,
yes.
They smell wonderful, and the monarchs need them. Be part of the monarch beltway.
And it'll be very interesting this year to see how many monarchs show up. There seemed to be a lot of them around last summer, at least, but I don't know if that will translate into more this year.
You never know from one year to the other, but the more habitat that people introduce and make them welcome, then the more likely we're able to sustain those populations. We have our vegetable garden, and in there we have our fennel, which I absolutely love that plant. It's beautiful when it's in bloom. It's a great pollinator plant, but what's really cool is a spice-tail butterfly leaves her eggs on the fennel, And so last year we were able to find and raise several of the spice-tailed butterfly basically right here at the garden center. Just they're hanging around. We're creating little habitats all over, little vignettes.
You also have the largest ironweed wildflower I've ever seen. I think it was right near your parking lot, and maybe 8 feet tall.
It is. I call that my weed garden. So when we do tours, and we love to do tours here to show different habitats, but the weed garden is milkweed and ironweed and Joe Pye weed and pokeweed. So several different kinds of weeds that are absolutely critical for fall blooms, for fall pollinators, for the bees and butterflies at the end of the season. Almost all of them start blooming in like August and September and right into almost October.
Well, I think I asked Janine about the ironweed, and she said it's not a special variety. It's just near the sprinkler, so that's why it got so big.
They like water. So also understanding the different habitats. If you have wet areas in your yard, what can we do for rain gardens? And ironweed is going to be one of the plants that you're going to put in there. And Joe Pye weed is another one that you're going to put in there. And the gorgeous button bush, which looks exotic. When people see it, they're like, what is this plant with all these cute little buttons all over it? Beautiful white, round, fluffy balls. And then they turn into round fruit that the birds eat as well. They truly look exotic.
Yeah, that's not one that I've seen. I got to come by and see it this year. This spring.
It's become one of my all-time favorites. And they do get really large in the wild. So now they have cultivars, nativars, where they're staying at 2 to 3 foot height. So a lot of the wild native plants have been bred so that we have tamer but yet still very functioning plants that can be ornamentals in people's gardens.
I've seen some smaller Joe Pye weed and some smaller goldenrod that are not just shorter but also less invasive. They don't send out as many roots all over your yard.
Yeah, like a solar cascade and golden fleece. Those are Solidago goldenrods. Oh, my. Those are one of my favorites. There's just way too many favorites, actually. But you're absolutely right. There's a lot of more tame little Joe Pye weed stays shorter.
Yeah.
And so many different things to choose from that we can help you with.
But also you have to keep in mind that shorter dwarf means shorter than the normal, and Joe Pye weed can be like 6 feet tall. So the shorter one doesn't mean it's 1 foot high. It's just, the Little Joe is maybe 3 feet, right? Something like that.
Yeah, Little Joe, 2 to 3 feet instead of 6 feet. Yeah.
All right. So, Lori, again, the Nursery and Garden Center, you're delivering mulch and things for people that want to work on their own projects. And mulch is, for me, one of my favorite parts of gardening and landscaping. It smells good. It's easy to work with. It's kind of light compared to, say, gravel or soil. And it just things look nice when you're done putting down mulch.
It does. It helps because it helps keep the weeds down. It helps keep moisture. The really critical piece, though, is not to put too much mulch around the plants. And definitely not to pile it up around the trunk. Otherwise, there's so much moisture that it will decay.
Yeah, it stops decaying in some cases. I've run into people who've put 8 or 10 inches on, which would be expensive too. I mean, you're spending money for mulch. You don't need 8 or 10 inches of it. But then it just turned white, and you could see the mycelium of the.
I'm sorry. But I have a customer here. Hang on, Michael. I have to point her in a direction.
You can,
I'm walking around the garden center.
Lori Broccolo is with us, Broccolo Nursery and Garden Center, which is on 441. And it's just east of Turkill Road, Route 250. One of our longtime sponsors and innovative company. We've talked before with her about rain gardens, rooftop gardens. They worked on installing the rooftop garden at I Square, if you've been up on the third floor there. Also the Seneca Park Zoo, the green roof that's been in for quite a few years now, and then did some work recently at the Rochester Museum and Science Center a couple of years ago for installation that they did. Again, educating people, educating people of all ages about water and stormwater runoff, things like that. So
yeah, we really enjoy designing for the environment that you have. So if you've got wet areas or hot, sandy soil areas like up in Webster, or heavy clay soil in Brighton and Henrietta, where you really need plants to absorb the water, and then the educational part about not only absorbing the stormwater and what you're helping with the infrastructure and slowing down these crazy deluge of rainfall, and then backing up the systems that were not built years ago in the towns to handle that amount of stormwater. So everybody's doing their part with the rain gardens, for example, starting to create no-mow zones instead of turf grass, but to have some wild meadows. Do we really need that much turf grass? It turns brown in the summer unless you water it. So let's start to just actually stop mowing and let things start to grow on their own, or purposely plant. And grasses, meadow grasses are actually another great plant for pollinating to sustain the native bees, for example. So there's so much more we can do with creating little parks in our own backyard. And I just think everybody needs to have a park in their own yard and be drawn out. Or even if you're sitting inside and just looking out the window and enjoying the birds and the butterflies and the activity, a garden is alive. Very exciting. And it changes every day.
And diverse. That's part of the key. Well, Lori, thank you for your time this morning, and good luck with spring as it's finally warm enough and people can start to plant more things. That's why you're in this business, right? Because you love planting, you love spring, and this is the time of the year. It's like a chef going to a farmer's market and seeing all the possibilities.
Yeah.
So all right, have a great day.
Thank you, Michael.
Thanks Lori. Bye-bye.
Bye.
It's Lori Bacolo. Bacolo Tree and Lawn Care and Nursery and Garden Center, which is on 441. The phone number here, 585-346-3000. And if you don't want to be on the air, you can leave a question with my engineer, Jeff, or you can email me, michael@saverlife.com. We have David on the line. Good morning, David.
Oh, morning, Michael. Yeah, I was kind of hoping when I heard her talking about attracting butterflies to your garden, I wonder if she had any other types of, if you remember that America has a whole lot of birds that are disappearing, and they probably would love to have a meal once in a while. And if there are trees or bushes that certain types of rare birds would love to have a meal from, what does she recommend? You know, would there be like a lawn and garden nursery that would offer bushes to feed the endangered species?
That's a good question. I've seen a number of displays and sort of sections at garden centers like Bacolo and also at Bristol's, at Sarah's Garden Center in Brockport, where they have native plants. And so I haven't seen plants to attract endangered species in particular, but in general, native plants are often have berries and things that birds, whether it's cedar waxwings or robins, would eat. The same with the butterflies. So they might have a pollinator area at the nursery, and you could choose some perennials that would help some of the pollinators and attract some of the butterflies. So there's a number of nurseries have sales areas, sections that they can direct you to for some of these plants. I think the biggest point, if you want to attract endangered species and butterflies and just more different birds, is you need a big diversity of plants. So you want
a wide diet kind of thing, huh?
Yeah, that's how you're going to attract more different wildlife. And grass is the antithesis of diversity. It's just, you know, there's if you treat them with a weed killer, there's not even a clover there for honeybees to visit. Get as diverse a yard as you can and incorporate as many native plants as you can. And if I run into some that are particular for endangered species, I'll make a note of it and tell people. There are, you know, for example, thistles are kind of a pain to have around because they're thorns, but the goldfinches use the down from the thistle to build their nests later in the season.
Yeah, I've climbed some trees and seen them up in there once in a while.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, one last thing along these lines. I used to live out in Colorado and took that Master Gardener class through the Extension Service. And I'm wondering, would the Extension Service have, of each given county, would the Extension Service have data on endangered species and how to revive them?
They might.
Maybe we could get a budget for that going.
Maybe some specific species. I'm not sure where you live, but Cornell Cooperative Extension, Ontario County or Monroe County, perhaps Livingston County, I would check with them. There is a big Master Gardener program at Ontario and especially Monroe County.
Yeah. Well, it just kind of, not only would it give a good line for, like the nurseries to cover, if they could add to their product line, but also, man, wouldn't it be great to have some of these critters coming back, especially like you're saying, the pollinators. Because if the bees are in trouble, like they're saying, we better come up with a plan B pretty quick. And if a bunch of neighborhoods or backyards or side roads or, in fact, I heard once that Texas, in order to save their mowing costs, they've got so many highways down there that their mowing costs are bankrupt in the state almost. And so they started putting in native grasses and native plants along state rights of way. And it saves in mowing costs because it's, they're generally not a fire hazard and they look good and they're less maintenance. So, along the idea that we could get some of these pollinator plants in rights of way and state and county management would take it in as a logical cost savings and a building up the quality of the county again.
Yeah, they are doing that along the thruway in some areas, some wildflowers and things, and hopefully on a much wider basis over time. Thanks for calling, David.
Sure.
I appreciate it.
Good week.
Have a great day. We will take a quick break. Be back after word from our sponsors on WYSL 1040. Warren Thomas here, the sponsors of Naturally Green. Those include Bergen Water Gardens, which is shipping lotus and also tropical water lilies. They've got some cool carnivorous plants. If you want to, it's not going to eliminate the mosquitoes and the flies and things around your house, and yard to have carnivorous plants, but they will eat some and they look kind of really cool. And it's something they've expanded their collection of substantially. It's kind of amazing. They're shipping them not just around our area, but around the United States and sending some of the lotus around the world. It's BurgeonWaterGardens.com to get more details. Between Churchville and Bergen on Buffalo Road, BurgeonWaterGardens.com. Also brought to you by Arbor Barber. Steve and Emily Leidy can help do some thinning, pruning, removal of trees. If you have got too much shade, give them a call, 289-4117. That's the Arbor Barber. Get it, you know, if you have a really big tree, maybe get a couple of quotes. The price can vary quite a bit. I think they're a good value. You know, they're not such a big company that they have a lot of overhead, but they are big enough to be well insured, very experienced, and you don't want just anyone with a chainsaw working on your property. It's too dangerous. You don't want friends, neighbors cutting down trees for you. It's dangerous to work with a chainsaw. You need a professional. Arbor Barber, 289-4117. Also, Fruition Seeds is doing some curbside pickup right now for springtime. They just started that on weekends. It's fruitionseeds.com. They'll ship you seeds. So the pickup is just for their transplants, which they're just starting to release last weekend. Obviously, it was snowing. But if you want seeds, those you can mail order, fruitionseeds.com. You can get more details there. And Sarah's Garden Center in Brockport, one of the premier garden centers around our region. We call it a destination garden center. Some gorgeous plants. And over the last couple of years, they've been bringing in more thornless raspberries and blackberries, some that are dwarf. Some cool options if you want to grow some of your own berries, as well as lots of other plants. So sarahsgardencenter.com and 389 East Avenue in Brockport. When you call and visit our sponsors, tell them you heard about it here on Naturally Green.
Inch by inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground. Inch by inch, row by row, someone bless these seeds I sow. Someone warm them from below till the rain comes tumbling down.
Michael Warren Thomas back here with Naturally Green. And just a note for David, one of our listeners, Nancy, has sent me a note that the DEC office in Avon is an excellent resource for wildlife maybe some questions on endangered species. As we find out more, I'll ask about some plants in particular that might be good. The Audubon Society, also a good source for information on endangered birds. Braddock Bay Research Center, there's a lot of great birding organizations. The Rochester Birding Association. Liz Magnani, the general manager of the Birdhouse, is the new president of the Rochester Birding Association. So some really good groups out there to get more information, and we'll have some more next week. Be back in the next hour with For Love of Food. Following that, Discover the Finger Lakes here on WYSL 1040.